Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Daniel Foster of National Review Online, and for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Dan, usually Friday's kind of a slow news day. Not the case today. And we start with the good martini, as always. Bill Clinton, not a frequent participant in this particular martini, but he is today. He was on Piers Morgan Tonight, a show that is now so unpopular that even Piers Morgan wasn't there to watch his own show. But Harvey Weinstein, of all people, was filling in. Anyway, the president was talking about, as you would expect him to do, why he thinks the president is a preferable choice to Mitt Romney. But in the process of explaining that, he had this little clip, which basically suggests that the Obama campaign tactic of trying to demonize Romney's private sector career once again is hitting a major stumbling block.
There's no question that in terms of getting up and going to the office and, you know, basically performing the essential functions of the office, a man who's been governor and had a sterling business career crosses the qualification threshold.
And so he joins the likes of Cory Booker, Mark Warner, Ed Rendell, Steny Hoyer even saying that private equity is generally a good thing. The Domino's Pizza CEO from back in the late 90s says that Bain Capital was great to work with when they were encountering problems. So, Dan, it looks like this Bain demonizing is taking on a whole lot of water.
Yeah, what they didn't show in that Clinton clip was that as soon as he got finished saying that, he leaned back in his chair, looked right at the camera and said, "You have anything to say about that, Axelrod? You want to give me a call? You got any comments on that?" I don't think the Obama campaign is going to try and booker Bill Clinton. I don't think that he's as much of a pushover as, unfortunately, Cory Booker turned out to be. Yeah, it's up and down the line. There's really nobody who's been a major surrogate who has any skin in the game who's been willing to toe the line on this Bain thing. Even the week after Booker was on Meet the Press, I remember they had Villaraigosa, the L.A. mayor.
Right.
And he is just about as reliable a mouthpiece for whatever the Democratic talking point of the day is as there is. I mean, he has this sort of second cottage industry when he's not in L.A. of just repeating presidential talking points. And he comes right out on Meet the Press and says, "I don't want to demonize private equity. Actually, I should say I worked in private equity for a couple of years, a couple of years ago. So they haven't been able to find anyone who can make this attack work. The other thing that I think is interesting here is it's a real strategic error on the Obama administration's part, the timing of this attack, because they've basically spent it and it's been neutered in May. And now they're turning to Romney's record as governor, which isn't the best record, you know, we should come out and say. But also, there's a lot of bright spots in the record, and it's certainly not as bad as the stuff I've heard coming out of the Obama administration. And more importantly, everything that the campaign criticizes Romney for doing, raising taxes, failing to get unemployment down, is something that you can turn around on Obama tenfold. So it's going to be an easy and obvious counterattack. But my point is that they spent the Bain attack. This Romney's record as governor attack is not really going to be a winning issue, especially when we get news like we're gonna get in the second martini as we did this morning. But if they had waited till October or something with this Bain attack, well, then maybe it would have been close enough to the election to take hold and really affect something. But they basically spent their wad on it now.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be the case. And David Axelrod probably wouldn't have the temerity to go try and correct Bill Clinton. He's also probably licking his own wounds from that really awkward press conference he held in front of the Massachusetts State House trying to demonize Romney's record in Massachusetts, where the Romney protesters pretty much won the day. So, sir, your efforts to supplant Joe Biden as the number two spokesman for this campaign shows that you're probably not ready for that role either. So on to martini number two now, and Dan foreshadowed it a moment ago. The jobs numbers from May, we had gotten some indicators earlier in the week that they would not be very good. Hampton Pearson of CNBC reported right around 8:30 this morning that they are indeed not good.
Up 69,000. May, nine farm payrolls increased by just 69,000 jobs. The unemployment rate is 8.2%. Average hourly earnings, 0.1%. The last time we had job growth below 100,000, April of this year, when it was 77,000, or back to August of 2011 at 85,000.
The only thing the administration can hang their head on a tiny bit here, Dan, and I do mean tiny, is that there was an uptick in the labor participation rate, which we hammer all the time as being the real reason the unemployment rate in recent months has gone down. Now it's back up, and everyone's talking from all the major news media outlets. This is shocking, completely unexpected. I can't believe that, given all the expectations and all the wonderful policies this administration has in place, that once again these numbers are in the doldrums. The numbers from the last 2 months, very badly revised downward, and the U6 number, which factors in people who have given up work and underemployed, back up to 14.8%. So this is not looking good for Obama, and worse than that, it's not looking good for America.
Yeah, you know, Jim Pethakoukas over at AEI, who's a great econ blogger, he's been keeping track of the unemployment rate as it relates to the now infamous chart that the Obama administration put out in January of 2009 about where unemployment would go after the passage of the stimulus. And he's been doing great work on that. And as you can guess, the line about where unemployment actually has gone and the line of where the Obama administration predicted it would go are quite different. A couple of things to keep in mind about this number is that, yes, even though labor force participation went up, if force participation were what it was when Obama took office, then the unemployment rate would be 10.9%. Mm. This month, the administration predicted that with the passage of the stimulus, unemployment would be 5.7%. So instead, it's at 8.2%. And then another thing to keep in mind is that those 69,000 jobs created, when you net them out, doesn't even keep up with population growth. So this is a really, really bad number. And the funny thing is, you see this, it's you could set your watch to it, but you see that this is the day. It's like every other, you know, every other Friday is the Democrats' turn to say that the president doesn't deserve the blame for, you know, economic numbers. And then, you know, alternate Fridays, it's their turn to say that the president deserves credit for good economic numbers.
Right.
So today you're seeing all these liberals come out and say, divided government, there's a lot of factors going into this. It's not President Obama's fault. So you now have people making essentially the argument that we can't blame President Obama for these bad job numbers after all he's done to turn around this economy. Right. So it's this really weird form of cognitive dissonance that comes with basically and the Democrats start this because they're the ones who think that the president of the United States, as long as he's a sufficiently convicted liberal, can, you know, create unemployment out of thin air. Can create employment, I should say. That was a Freudian slip. Can create employment out of thin air. So if they want to, if Obama wants to go on TV and say, "Hey, look, you know, president really isn't a job creator. The best he can do is get out of business's way." Well, then we'll stop blaming him for bad job numbers.
If only Congress had gone along with the tax hike on millionaires, quote unquote, and on job creators, I'm sure with a much higher overhead, they would have created many more jobs. So clearly, it's the fault of the Republicans in Congress.
And yeah, it's also the fault of the Republicans in Congress that we saw the other day that corporate profits are at an all-time low. Yes, that's got to be the Republicans' fault too.
I'm sure it is. So while some people are focused on the economy, the president should be. Instead, he's going to 6 fundraisers over the next couple days here. Mitt Romney's focused like a laser on the economy. Other politicians, Dan, including where you live, not so much focused on what are probably the most important issues of the day. Instead, New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg declaring war on the giant soda at the movie theater, at the restaurant, and even from the carts on the corners in the city, is no one safe from this nanny statism. Here's Bloomberg defending this position on MSNBC on Thursday.
In a restaurant, 16 ounces is the maximum that they would be able to serve in one cup. If you want to order 2 cups at the same time, that's fine. It's your choice. We're not taking away anybody's right to do things. We're simply forcing you to understand that you have to make the conscious decision to go from one cup to another cup.
Dan, anytime a sentence includes the two phrases at the same time, we're not taking away rights, we're just forcing you, not a good juxtaposition.
And it becomes Orwellian when he says, we're forcing you to understand.
Right.
No, this is, you know, I'll tell you, I was walking to the office at NRHQ the other day, and I saw a bunch of prohibition agents tipping out barrels of Mountain Dew into the streets. It was really kind of amazing. And then a guy came up to me with a trench coat, and he opened up, and he said, "I'm holding Dr. Pepper." This is absolutely ridiculous. We've come to expect this sort of thing from Mayor Bloomberg, unfortunately. He's right in basically admitting that it can't possibly work, which is another way of saying what he said. I guess if he were really serious, he would, you know, barricade off the island of Manhattan and really just outlaw soda consumption here. And we should also note that, and some, I'll give them credit, some super progressive liberal economics types have made this point, is that it's essentially a tax on the poor because they're the big consumers of soda, whereas your 28-ounce venti latte, half-calf, skim whip frappuccino has been accepted purposely from this law. So it's not really going to hit the Upper East Side all that hard.
Unbelievable. I like how he does it with a straight face. Even Jon Stewart last night was saying that he was forced to agree with Tucker Carlson on this, which is a pretty funny moment on The Daily Show. But this is one of those issues, I think, where even the left is trying to wonder what's going on, because they love government regulation until it actually affects their lives personally. This clearly does. So we'll see if it actually takes root. But after the Bloomberg wars on smoking and salt and whatever else he's decided to waste his time focused on, I wouldn't be surprised if the ban does go into effect.
But, yeah, and I'll tell you, if he tries to ban Red Bull, he's going to have a revolt on his hands from Wall Street.
And that's the last thing he needs if he wants to manufacture a fourth term, which I wouldn't be surprised at either. So, Dan, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Daniel Foster, news editor at National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join Jim and I again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.